At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
On the program today, a little oil, a little jobs, and a little trip I took to the metaverse. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday today, the very first day of June. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We give you, as a way to get going today, the closing price of Brent North Sea crude oil, the global benchmark is what that is, $116.29 a barrel, up about 0.6% or so. And we gave you that as a way to highlight this. OPEC Plus meets tomorrow to set production targets for the first time since the European Union agreed to a partial ban on Russian oil. Now, it might be instructive here to point out that membership of OPEC Plus includes all 13 OG members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, plus, get it, plus OPEC Plus, plus 10 non-OPEC countries, including, of course, Russia, which is one of the world's top crude exporters. And there are some murmurings, as reported in the pages of the Wall Street Journal, that not all of the countries in the club are all that interested in Russia getting a vote on how much crude to pump right now. Our oil guy, Andy Euler, is on it.
The relationship between Russia and OPEC has always been contentious. Even though it isn't an official member of OPEC, Russia has been working with the cartel to set how much oil gets onto the market since the middle of the last decade.
Both the Saudis and the Russians have been keen to say that they see strategic value here.
That's Mark Finley at Rice University. He says that value rests partly on the fact that the Saudis and the Russians produce the second and third most oil in the world, believe it or not, behind the U.S. So their partnership carries a lot of pricing power. And sometimes the alliance has looked like a good geopolitical bet, too.
And yeah, we've seen efforts, in fact, on both sides to at least pay lip service to the idea of expanding that strategic relationship beyond the tactical dimensions of cutting and managing oil production.
That is, he says, until Russia invaded Ukraine. Since then, Russia has been missing its oil production targets. And if it's not hitting its quotas, Sarah Vakshery, president of SVB Energy, says, then it's not much use to OPEC.
Because Russia cannot make its commitments, and also the policies of Russia is not in line with OPEC's agreement, then it might be perhaps a good solution for OPEC to have Russia out.
Now, in the past, OPEC has exempted some countries under sanctions from meeting production targets. Iraq in the 1990s, and currently Iran, Libya, and Venezuela. Michael Lynch, a distinguished fellow at the Energy Policy Research Foundation, says OPEC has to be careful if it's going to distance itself from Russia.
Unless they're allowed a very graceful exit, I think it's going to make it a lot harder to get their cooperation in the future. And that could be a real problem for OPEC.
Because, he says, if OPEC wants to cut production in the future to help regulate prices, Russia might just say no. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, things are more down than up. We will have the details when we do the numbers. The macroeconomic acronym of this Wednesday is an oldie but a goodie, JOLTS, the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, from which we learned this morning that, holy cow, is this job market still tight. Job openings were off just a touch, but still real close to record highs. The number of people quitting their jobs also near record highs, and layoffs a new record low. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino is on that one.
The labor market is tight, but this might be as tight as it's going to get, says Daniel Zhao with job site Glassdoor.
That doesn't mean that we're about to head into a recession. It just means that the labor market might normalize. It might be a little bit slower, but ultimately still healthy.
There are still about 1.9 job openings for every one unemployed person. On one hand, that's good for workers, says Elise Gould at the Economic Policy Institute.
We're continuing to see hiring at a good rate. We're continuing to see workers quit in search of better opportunities. What I see is a very strong recovery continuing.
But a labor market that stays too tight could contribute to inflation, as Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell explained during an interview with Kai on this show last month.
There's more demand for workers than there are people to take the jobs right now by a substantial margin. And because of that, wages are moving up at levels that are unsustainably high.
Trouble hiring could also slow down growth for some businesses, like the food tour company run by Avital Unger, who's struggling to staff up for what she hopes will be a busy summer tourism season.
We love to hire, you know, passionate foodies and actors. But, you know, obviously there's challenges when it's not a full-time job.
So far, it doesn't look like the labor market is driving inflation, says Betsy Stevenson, an economist at the University of Michigan.
We don't see that inflation is the highest in sectors that have been paying workers more.
Rather, she says, prices have shot up fastest for things that aren't affected by the job market, like housing and energy. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
I left my office the other day for another part of Marketplace's still mostly empty headquarters to do an interview.
Okay, so wait. So here we are. We're in a conference room. There's somebody very cleverly put the Marketplace website up on the big screen on the wall.
Pretty standard. Big long table, chairs all around. Except
if you move close enough to it, there you go. And
I just transfigured through the door, through the wall.
This room isn't real. I've entered it using a virtual reality headset. It's a big white pair of electronic goggles that tracks my head and my hands and my body as I move around. And when I lift my hands up in the real world, I can see a sort of pixelated, animated version of them in this simulated world. I can turn 360 degrees and look all the way around. It's kind of like being inside a video game, right? Instead of watching it on a screen.
All right, what's that little laser pointer thing in my vision? Am I like going to snipe at you or something?
I know that you can't see what I'm seeing on the inside of these goggles, but I'm going to do my best to explain it to you because some of the biggest companies in the world are pouring billions of dollars into this thing called the metaverse. And you have almost certainly heard that term by now, right? When Facebook did its big rebrand to Meta back in October, Mark Zuckerberg laid out his vision for the next chapter of the internet in which we would work and socialize and live much of our lives in a three-dimensional digital environment like the one I'm in.
There you go.
How many people does it take to get Kai into VR? All right. Wow.
Rami Rattan is there with me. He's an associate professor at Michigan State University's Media and Information Department. And I can see his oddly proportioned digital avatar's mouth moving as he talks, and he can see my avatar as well. It's actually got a picture of my real face plastered on its head, which is disturbing.
If you use your left joystick, you can walk.
Really? like without
Lucky for me, Robbie's a regular here. He's been studying digital worlds for about 20 years, and he teaches a college course in virtual reality using the same software and equipment that we're using now.
Use your left joystick.
What do I do?
Yes, please don't walk. You might hit a real thing.
In the real world, I'm on a maybe 6-foot by 10-foot patch of carpet in Marketplace's world headquarters here in Los Angeles. Robbie's at his lab in Michigan, but in the virtual world, he's just across the room.
Small movements. You don't want to vomit.
So that's like going to be a thing because last time
the headsets, the goggles are made by Meta, the parent company of Facebook. We bought the ones I'm wearing for $299.
Better than it used to be.
All right. Let me get back to setting the scene here because not everybody can see what I'm seeing, and this is much less fun for them to hear on the radio. But we're in a conference room. Everybody's got a laptop computer. And we could, if it was you and me and 10 of our colleagues, we could have a legit meeting in here.
We could.
This digitally rendered conference room is made by yet another company, not Facebook, called Engage, which advertises itself as a, quote, metaverse platform for immersive meetings and virtual events.
Is Engage. It is a piece of the metaverse in a way. One day we'll be able to just easily jump between these virtual platforms. Right now, you kind of have to install it like an app on your phone.
I think this is an uninformed question. How many metaverses are there?
I would say there are zero at this moment. It's kind of like the question of how many internets are there. And in the year 1988, there were zero.
Right.
Maybe by 92, you would say, okay, there's some internets. So this is like a little oasis in the three-dimensional internet right here. This is one of many.
Today on apps like this, you can go to live concerts, play card games with strangers from around the world, or browse art galleries and museums.
We could draw on the whiteboard over here, which is a
two-dimensional
whiteboard.
No way! How do I do that?
Well, just walk over and...
This is so funny, because you said...
Yeah, that whiteboard thing was harder than it sounded. I couldn't figure out how to pick up the marker.
Show up in front of you. Do you see that?
No.
And then I couldn't figure out how to put it down.
I do have this... I've still got the damn dry erase marker in my hand. Sorry.
Meanwhile, Robbie was just making stuff out of thin air.
And I can have some pretend people join us.
That's
here.
Freaking.
We can have a big T-Rex eating this man here. So what's the point of this? Well, I often will have my students or through a meeting spawn digital objects, virtual objects like this, and we bring them up as a piece of our discussion. You know, for example, if it's an architecture-related class, we could bring up buildings and people could bring things in that they design. We can look at them from different angles, etc., using the medium to our advantage. Go ahead.
Well, you know what's really interesting, and this is a little abstract, but you ever seen guys flying drones, right? You see those guys flying drones and they're like, wow, man, that's like an extension of their arm. And you know, I try to fly a drone and I, of course, crash it. That's exactly what's happening here, right? I have no idea what I'm doing. And you, as an experienced person in the metaverse, are just zipping around and creating things and this and that. So the learning curve with this, all of which is to say, is not small.
I would beg to differ. You've only been in here a couple of minutes. I bet, Kai, we could have you ready to teach people how to use it within 20 minutes of training.
I'm a reasonably competent guy, and I couldn't figure out how to pick up a dry erase marker.
You got to navigate. Right. You got to navigate. It takes a little bit.
Once
you get it, though, you
that's
got
fair.
It.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to take us over to an expo hall.
Okay.
Our audio is going to be cut out for just a moment as we transport.
Everything faded to black for a second. It was kind of weird, actually. And then...
All right. So this is a much bigger space.
So it is much bigger.
Remember, in the real world, I didn't move. I was still in that same small corner of Marketplace's offices. But in just a couple of seconds, Robbie had transported us to what felt like a big exposition hall with a stage on one end and booths up and down the sides.
So this is actually one of my favorite places to hold class.
Okay.
Because I will have students set up in different booths and put together a small presentation. And then as a class, we move around and hear them present. But you could also imagine this for business meetings,
sure.
Of course, for conferences, for any type of event, convention. And yeah, do you want me to teach you how to make an object appear?
Yeah.
He did, and with a couple of clicks, I created a helicopter.
Downloading update. Not only is it a helicopter, it's a life-size helicopter with the rotors turning. What more can the business world want?
One reason that companies are investing billions into the metaverse right now is because of the potential for digital objects like this one.
I could, as you can tell, very easily create a helicopter for you to see and fabricate these pieces of equipment based on custom orders. And then you could sell it to them in Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever.
Well, let's not go there, right? That's for Kygos and the Metaverse, Section 15, I think.
Between hardware and software and events and advertising opportunities, Bloomberg Intelligence figures the metaverse could be an $800 billion market someday soon. But right now, it's just hard to take digital objects from place to place. It's still a lot of individual virtual worlds.
Yeah, but we could talk virtual. Yeah, what else do you want to experience? Should we go to another space?
Let's go to another space, just for the heck of it.
Sure. You're not afraid of water, are you?
I guess we're going to find out.
Oh, we are not done with the metaverse. More straight ahead. Coming up.
Water. We're underwater.
Oh, yeah, we were. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials down 176. Today, about a 0.5%, finished at 32,813. NASDAQ down 86 points, 0.7%, 11,994. S&P 500 down 0.75%, 4101 on the S&P. The global bull market for battery metals is apparently over, so says Goldman Sachs. That pronouncement has been sending shares in lithium companies tumbling. Piedmont Lithium discharged more than 13%. Livent ran down more than 14%. Day 3 out of 12. That is how many districts of the Federal Reserve reported hearing concerns about a coming recession while interviewing businesses for the Beige Book that came out today. The biggest concern of businesses that talk to the Fed? I'm not even going to give you any guesses on this one, because if you don't get it, I don't even know what I'm doing here. Labor market difficulties. You're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Gusto. Let your employees know you've got their back by signing up for Gusto for payroll and HR. More than 300,000 small business owners use Gusto. They offer benefits like health insurance, employee onboarding, and more. Get your payroll taxes filed, deductions calculated, and your team paid fast. No more pain. Just the joy of running your business. Get 3 months free when you go to gusto.com/marketplace. That's gusto.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We return now to one tiny part of the yet-to-be-fully-realized thing called the metaverse. I got there using a clunky pair of electronic goggles made by Meta, of course, the parent company of Facebook.
Okay, so the main thing they have to do, whether it's Zuckerberg and Oculus or I don't care who, they have to weigh less than 15 pounds and not give you a headache in 20 minutes.
You can loosen the straps.
Well, I also have an,
that
I
might
also
be part of the problem.
Head, so that's neither here nor there.
Physically, I'm at Marketplace's world headquarters in Los Angeles, but my three-dimensional, somewhat cartoony-looking avatar with a real picture of my face on it, by the way, is somewhere else.
We're underwater. We're like
we are
in a trench here. Actually, not that deep, but
I'm standing on what looks like the ocean floor next to another digital avatar representing Robbie Rattan. He's an associate professor in the Media and Information Department at Michigan State. And we're surrounded by a calming blue. There are rolling waves on the simulated surface way up above, a kind of pixelated seashell-laden floor at my feet, and the occasional fish swimming by.
I love teaching class in here. It's surreal, and my students say they remember more when we change locations.
Oh, I buy that. Yeah.
They'll say like, oh yeah, we talked about the concept of avatar identities influencing user behaviors, you know, in the ocean. And I will associate those two things, and that's how they
are
able to recall it more
easily. Back up for
later.
A minute, because there's a whole layer of this that we haven't touched on, mm-hmm. which is that, yes, business and finance and econ and buying helicopters – but we are fundamentally representing, and I'll keep it in the marketplace gist, right? We're fundamentally representing consumers artificially. And how we represent here, I imagine, changes how we behave here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. So there's this phenomenon called the Proteus effect, which is one of the main theories that I've studied as a media researcher. And it's the notion that when you use an avatar that has certain characteristics, it influences your behavior. If you use a taller avatar, you'll negotiate more aggressively. If you use an avatar that's more attractive, you'll have more social confidence. You'll stand closer to people. My favorite one is if you use an avatar that looks like an inventor compared to a street clothes avatar, you'll actually come up with more creative ideas during brainstorming.
Seriously?
Yep. That one's been replicated a few times. I ran a meta-analysis of about 50 studies.
But I can't even see myself.
In this environment, there aren't many reminders of who you are. A lot of these studies do include a virtual mirror where you can see yourself. You know, like if I stood here and said, hey, Kyle, let's take a selfie.
That selfie thing didn't really work.
Did you see that? Oh, you can't see it, huh?
He tried recording a video of us instead.
Let's do the wave or something.
And a three-dimensional recording of our virtual reality selves popped into view.
All right, so first of all, I've got no arms.
That's a problem.
So you can see yourself.
Despite the technical glitches and the fact that my forehead was killing me from wearing that headset, I will admit that talking to Robbie's digital avatar in this virtual world was kind of similar to doing an interview in person.
I'm down in some abyss with the freaking killer whales or something. All right, there we go.
Do you think the challenge is technology or is the challenge scale in getting wider adoption?
Generally, when we're looking at mass media historically, the technology is the scale issue, right? And media economies of scale are essential. So we need to be able to standardize across the different technologies in order to produce at a low enough cost.
So that everybody can pay $300. It's got to be less than $300 for one of these headsets, right? Because the barrier to entry, even though $300 is not a lot of money, for some, it's not a doable amount of money.
Exactly. We need these things to get cheaper, and we also need them to be less of a walled garden. You know, if you have to buy one radio to listen to Marketplace and another radio to listen to another show,
right?
That doesn't work. So platforms like Engage and Ready Player Me, which is an avatar creation platform, they're doing a great job of trying to make themselves interoperable using standards that work across different technologies, like a JPEG file.
You know, you mentioned Ready Player Me, which of course makes me think of Ready Player One, which was just a great movie, which I really liked. That's the future, right? That's where we're going?
Hopefully not the dystopian end of humanity side of it.
Not the bad guy part.
The technology, many, many pieces of that vision for the future are likely to be true.
Robbie, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
As Robbie and I talked about, this is just one tiny part of the thing that people call the metaverse. The interconnected digital world is still under construction. But companies are buying digital land and selling digital clothes and trying to build stuff in the metaverse that honestly, I don't quite understand yet. So in a couple of months, maybe we'll have Robbie on again to explore another part of it.
Good stuff.
Thanks, Kai.
My pleasure. I would shake hands except I can't figure out how to do it.
Here we go.
Look at that. All right, that's a little weird.
Shake
Of course, this is one of those things you're going to want to see. We've got a video on our Twitter feed. We are at Marketplace. Check it out. Back in the early days of the pandemic, when we were all afraid to leave our homes and yet still had to eat, grocery delivery businesses, I know you remember this, they filled a critical need. Now, though, the future of that slice of this economy looks a little bit cloudy. The number of Amazon Prime members buying groceries on that site is trending down. That's according to data from CoreSight Research. And a bunch of those ultra-fast delivery startups have filed for bankruptcy of late. And yet, Instacart still does plan to go public. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab looked at the make-or-break industry that is grocery delivery.
One thing that defined the early days of the pandemic for me was grocery shopping. There was the panic buying before lockdown or setting an alarm at 2 a.m. to try to get a delivery slot. Shopping trips became special because they marked the passage of time. Arun Sudaram, a retail analyst at CFRA Research, says everything about shopping changed.
And no retailer is really prepared for that, to be honest.
Especially on the delivery side. So big grocers partnered with apps that were already equipped to get stuff to customers quickly.
And now that online grocery shopping is slowing down a little bit, they have a little more time to build out their own infrastructure.
It's why we're seeing an industry shakeup. Walmart, the largest grocery chain, is expanding its in-home delivery service, while Instacart has slashed its valuation by almost 40%. A plus for grocery delivery, some of the early pandemic behavior stuck. Bobby Gibbs, a consumer goods analyst at Oliver Wyman, says people are still eating in more and grocery order sizes are still large. But even though some people have taken to buying milk and bread online, many are going back to stores in person. They feel safe again, and they're worried about inflation.
How do consumers think about the extra cost of delivery as they become more price sensitive?
Supermarkets aren't just worried about inflation. They're also stuck on supply chain problems, especially apps that focus on last-minute orders and promise delivery in 15 minutes or less. Adam Wasensky is the U.S. head of operations at Gorillas.
If we don't have one of the products you need for your dinner tonight, chances are you won't order from us.
Because if you have to run to the store for taco shells, what's the point of ultra-fast delivery? I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, in which Elon Musk, and I promise this is not a Twitter story. Anyway, Musk has clearly had it with this whole work at home thing. The CEO of Tesla sent an email to company executives yesterday, the operative parts of which read as follows. Everyone at Tesla is required to spend a minimum of 40 hours a week in the office. Moreover, he went on, the office must be where your actual colleagues are located, not some remote pseudo office. If you don't show up, he said, we will assume you have resigned. So that. Elsewhere in corporate executive news today, Sheryl Sandberg said this afternoon that after 14 years as the COO of Facebook, now Meta, of course, she is done, going to step down, staying, though, on the corporate board. Okay, off we go. First, though, of course, your moment of economic context, a tidbit from the Mortgage Bankers Association, mortgage applications they report, and this makes total sense when you think about where rates are right now. Mortgage applications down 14% from a year ago. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.